All right, welcome back. We are here for this week's edition of the After the Five. I'm here as always with my good friends and partners, Ann Mazinga and Carter Jensen. And we're going to break down this week's top headlines for you in further detail. So it was a big week. If you listen to the Fast Five, it was pretty heavy with investment-related news. So a lot of series and round funding in the VC world for the likes of The Real Real and Brandless, my personal favorite. And what was the other one? Optoro, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and then even Google investing in Scandit. So yeah, four numbers, of the five stories were all about investment. So we can hit those if you guys want, or if there were other things that, you know, kind of floated your fancy. Where do you guys want to start this week? Carter, anything?
Yeah, I'm going to maybe I'll avoid the numbers and jump kind of the back of your Fast Five,
right,
if that's all right. But you talked a really interesting point about how the number of people who are looking to Amazon first when they're searching for products is continuing to grow.
Yep.
Right? And I think it's a fascinating point when we start to think about like e-commerce in general, right? When you're saying, oh, you know, we're pouring tons of money into our .com strategy, or we built this beautiful e-commerce experience. But in reality, over half of your customers, or depending on the product, you know, category you're in,
right,
are not even, you know, going to your site in the first place. They're sitting on Amazon. They love that experience. It's a familiar experience to them. And whenever they need something, just type it into the incredibly powerful Amazon search bar. And I think it has a ton of implications both for Amazon and other brands as well. So, yeah.
What are you guys doing? What do you do when you're doing your product searches?
I usually do one of two things. I'll usually either go to Amazon or I go to Google. It's one of the two. It probably is about in reality, it's probably like the research survey said, which for those that didn't see the Fast Five, basically it's saying that people that are doing first product searches are primarily doing them on Google or Amazon. That represents about 88% of the market. And people that are actually still going to retailers or branded shops to start their searches is almost at 10% now.
So, yeah, it's,
you know, so
tiny.
The psychology is really like, hey, I'm just going to go to the mall and see what's there. And in this case, it's like, I'm going to go to the Amazon or not
the
Amazon, but go to Amazon or Google and do the same thing. And, but usually, I mean, if it's a product that I think is highly price competitive and I'm not sure quite how much selection is on Amazon, which is hard to say, but I think that still happens, like especially with products like, you know, higher end products, I'll usually go to Google and then use shopping to see what has the lowest price once I know what I want.
Right.
Yeah, I think Amazon though, I mean, I personally start all my search on Amazon. Maybe there's an outlier, as you mentioned, for a higher end product where you're looking to maybe browse and experience and research a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I always start on Amazon, but I think what you have to remember is the variables are the things that are attributing to why we're doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You talk about, you know, you're going just to the mall, but it's not just the mall. It's the mall that you're familiar with. It's the mall that you trust. It's the mall that already has all your billing information. It's the mall that knows you better than you know yourself. It's delivering all the products you'd ever want, and it's going to get to you in a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's no better experience. So why would I take the risk, or why would I go through the trouble to try to quickly learn some new experience by going to some other retailer site or going to a brand site, et cetera?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to the psychology too of what mindset you're in, right? Like, are you in a shopping mindset or a buying mindset?
Mm-hmm.
And if you've already done a lot of that research or that type of thing, and then you just want to find where the product is, and you're just in the buying mindset, then yeah, you're going to go to one of those things because you know you're going to get it real fast and real easy. It's going to be super convenient.
Right.
So how do you do it?
I think that I'm searching more often on Google than I am on Amazon because I think price point is another factor where, you know, it may require some extra heavy lifting. I totally get it. And the experience isn't going
to
be as great, but I feel like right now Google is able to give you the best kind of dashboard of what all your options are. So I think about the types of items that I'm ordering online, and you know, if you're putting like commodities aside, I think you're looking at bigger like price point purchases in those cases, and that I guess I'm looking at Google. But it was interesting. I mean, none of the stats there were really startling because like men starting their searches on some of the traditional.
Men not getting the retail joke as fast as
like women doing more like ordering on Amazon. Some of those things weren't super surprising, but I think, you know, as this evolves, it'll be there'll be some changes. And I think as the younger, you know, Gen Z and younger start to come online, like they've
That's
become so programmed to just go directly to Amazon.
Yeah, and I think the last, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off, but I think the last point of that is though, you know, you said you look at Google to compare pricing, but mm-hmm. I would argue, especially for this kind of new generation that's coming up, the $1, $5, $10 that you might save by comparing is worth spending, knowing that you have a platform you trust, knowing you don't have to figure out another login, knowing you don't have to deal yeah. with a different set of customer service representatives. You know the deal. Mm-hmm. And I would say often it is worth the $1, $5, $10 sure. to make that happen.
Yeah, or at least going through the gymnastics to sure. decide if you want to do that. I think the other, I know we're talking about this for a while, but actually the other point I want to bring up that is something that I know is near and dear to you is also this idea of social commerce, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, what's fascinating about them, you said, now let's put Facebook in that. When
right.
you're in the mindset of actually shopping, mm-hmm. or social platforms in the mindset sure. of shopping,
yeah.
and then they becoming the de facto marketplace totally. For where product searches happen. Mm-hmm. That we haven't seen yet in that data.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the sub-trend that I think if we started to track, and so if, you know, if Jolly Good Gifts, who had tracked this survey, starts to look at that, I'd be curious to see, because what's going to start happening there, you
right.
know, as that, I mean, you can't really even do it yet, but, you know, that yeah. could happen. I'm curious
yeah.
what you think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't know, you know, you talk about the shopping aspect of it versus the buying, and I think the biggest thing to look at, and I mentioned this when we talked about why we're seeing this with Amazon, is it's a platform that you know, it's a platform you trust. It's like going to a mall, but and you know every corner. It's that hometown mm-hmm. mall that you spent probably way too much time at when you were 16 years old. Amazon's that, but if you imagine Facebook and Instagram, there's not a mall or there's not a place you spend more time than those two platforms. And if they're able to enable commerce on those, which they are, you're all of a sudden delivering an experience to the user that is so familiar that they're able to navigate and do really whatever they want with that shopping or buying all within the platform without ever having to go anywhere else. And it's comfortable, it's trustworthy, they know you. It's a very similar argument to what we made for Amazon 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
No, that's all. Yeah. And Andy F., if you're listening, I know you're working on these very ideas, so figure it the heck out and let's talk about it some more. So, all right, what else? What else caught your guys' eye this week?
Well, I think something that wasn't in the news that I wanted to touch on is IKEA. And so Carter and I, and mm-hmm. our advertising backgrounds, I think I found this really interesting. So IKEA has cut production of their printed catalog, and they were beautiful catalogs. They were kind of one of the pioneers, especially in starting to go away from, you know, actual photo shoots and taking 3D images and using those to more efficiently operate and print their catalogs. But now they're moving away from that. They're going to take their full budget from those printed catalogs and put them into pop-up catalogs and pop-up and other, experiential marketing type activities,
sure, totally.
Which I think is really interesting. In IKEA, you know, they've always been a trailblazer in the retail industry. And so I'm interested to see kind of how that will kind of have a ripple effect throughout the rest of retail as we see people moving away from catalogs, obviously because of sustainability, but then also, you know, what they can offer in more localized experiences for their markets, and then also what they can do at those experiences to really get more brand advocacy for themselves.
So basically what you're saying is IKEA was one of the first people to kind of take some of the cost out of their catalog production.
Right.
And now they're actually seeing a value of taking more costs out of catalogs in general by not doing them anymore,
right.
and shifting more of their money into pop-up physical marketing.
Exactly.
To highlight and showcase the IKEA brand.
Yep.
That's really interesting. That's it. I mean, especially when you look at what they've done with companies like Zanya Technology. Like, there's videos on YouTube with this too, where you can see some of the things they're doing around mobile shopping and showrooming
right.
and bringing those experiences to life in new ways. Like, there's some fascinating stuff out there.
And their local stores, you know, as they're starting to test out getting into their
stores,
urban markets. I mean, that's still, again, we talked about this a few weeks ago, but it's an interesting way for IKEA to really start to penetrate those urban markets. So it's not a, you know, rent an hour car or, you know, ride the subway to get to an IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
It's bringing IKEA into those smaller urban, more dense environments.
And then using their mega stores in a different way. Yeah,
exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah, that was kind of an under the radar story.
I think there's two sides to this. I lean on one, right? I mean, obviously, you pull money out of catalog. I mean, the reach of it is diminishing. It's not the right audience for them.
Right.
If they're looking to what's next. I think, you know, but IKEA has been known for some great print ads too. Like, I mean, they have been, you know, one of the best, you know, creative advertisers around.
Right.
But I think no matter how great your print ad is, if no one sees it, then what's the point of it,
mm-hmm.
right? Tree falls in the woods, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, right.
I think, you know, so in my world, no brainer. I think it makes complete sense. But I also don't want to, you know, be the devil's advocate with this as well.
Sure.
You look at shifting those dollars to experiential, and you say, well, and we'll use round numbers just for the sake, but you spend $1,000 in print ads, mm-hmm. and you can get distribution of, you know, a pretty good amount of people still. With experiential, you spend $1,000 experiential, and, you know, a great event, you have a couple hundred, maybe 1,000, 2,000 people show up. Mm-hmm. It's much more expensive. The cost per impression there is so much higher than the cost per impression when you look at a print ad. Now, obviously, so much more impactful, meaningful. It, you know, across all measures, it is a better experience. Oh, 100%. Yeah. It is better. The question is that worth it? And I think for IKEA, it's a like I said, it's a no-brainer for them. I think that's the right way to reach this new audience. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, you have to always think about the other side of things. You know, how effective are those dollars going to be when you shift to a new medium?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a testament to retailers having to start to think differently.
Totally.
And really advertising in general, how people are kind of shifting the way that they're doing, that they're advertising.
Which goes back to the first thing we talked about, which is people are changing how they shop.
Yeah.
Like how you traditionally shop. Like you, as you were talking, Carter, I doubt you've seen this movie, but Fight Club, where the Edward Norton character is literally lives for the delivery of the IKEA catalog in like 1999. It's like his seminal moment in his life. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's just not the same anymore. So
yeah,
interesting. What else? Walmart was in the news this week. Did you guys catch that one?
Yeah, we didn't want to cover Walmart. We didn't cover it in the Fast Five just to save everybody the trouble of having to hear another Walmart story. But they were in the news. They had a pilot running that they just decided to cut. Mark Lurie himself came up with this pilot where they tested in a couple of markets. They were having the employees of Walmart drive packages from the store employees.
Yeah, yes. People that had been working in the store.
They work a whole shift at Walmart. And then they take packages, and Walmart says, you want to make some extra money, you can take and deliver these packages on your way home. And that didn't work, which I don't find at all surprising. I mean, I don't know about you guys and what your like routine is on your way home from work, but I mean, I'm not in the mood to like deal with more people when I'm on my way home. It's like decompression time, you know, especially working a long shift on your feet. Not surprisingly, they didn't have a lot of people sign up for this. It didn't work, and so they're going to cut that pilot. It wasn't the best option for last mile delivery for Walmart. Yeah. So,
well, you've worked in stores. I mean, you worked at
J.Crew. Yeah.
I worked in Target stores. I always used to joke that like working a day in the store is like moving your house. Like every single day is the equivalent of moving your house. Like you're exhausted, and the last thing I want to do is go make a delivery. And if I want to make money making deliveries, I'd go be a delivery driver.
Right.
Psychology of all this stuff.
Yeah. I think that's the other point. It's like, and then now the inventory of delivery drivers is very apparent. I mean, I still think it's trying to catch up to the demand a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you have services and drivers who are specifically dedicated to doing this 10 hours a day, and it's incredibly available, you know, it's like, how are you competing with someone who only maybe delivers a package or two a day, who just worked 8 hours, isn't trained, doesn't necessarily know where to go. You know, there's a million variables there.
Right.
So why wouldn't you just go to the professionals who are much more efficient at it, right?
Totally. And think about like the impression that has on whoever you're delivering the package to.
Consistency
like,
of brand.
Who's their impression of the Walmart brand is somebody at the end of their shift exhausted bringing a package into their house.
Half untucked
like,
shirt,
man, that's not really who I want to be bringing something in. That person just wants to get home and you know, sit on
Rightfully
the couch
so.
And catch up on Gossip Girl.
No.
So
yes.
No, that's a really good point.
Personally,
but,
I'm sorry.
Know, yeah, right. I would never know. But here's the cool thing. They tried it.
Yeah.
And it failed. So what?
Yep.
Do I care? Do I think less of Walmart? No. Actually, I would give them a ton of credit for trying it. Even though it probably, if you sit back and look at it, makes sense. But hindsight's always 20/20, right? It's always easy to take
that's
better
very
approach.
Valid.
It was an out-of-the-box idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I give them a ton of credit. Yeah. Out-of-the-big-box idea.
Yeah.
Hey. All right. One more thing. I'm just curious because I'm always pretty hard on this because I don't quite understand it. But in the Fast Five, I juxtaposed RealReal's investment raise with Brandless investment raise. Mm-hmm. Me being long on the RealReal and actually quite short and quite skeptical, not only of Brandless, but of just the state of the economy and how much money from a VC perspective is being funded into some of these companies. What's your guys' take? Am I crazy? Am I off base? What do you think about this one?
You know, I think back to just, you know, some research, like unofficial research I've done as I've been talking to millennials and Gen Z demographics, I guess. And they love Brandless, mm-hmm. you know, like I think I ask them, why do you love Brandless yeah. so much? What do you love about it? And they're like, I don't know. It's just cool. It's $3 and I get all these things. And, you know, instead of just going to the dollar store and getting face wash, they are getting a sustainably produced yeah. face wash for $3 and it's being shipped directly to their house. And so I think for now, like, you know, they're doing well the first year. They're certainly able to get a significant yeah. amount of investment. So, you know, maybe it's just something that as a consumer, I don't particularly understand or see the immediate benefit from. But, you know, I think it's hilarious, the direct-to-consumer Trader Joe's. That's awesome. But again, like Trader Joe's, people love it. I have a hard time shopping there. It's not conveniently laid out. It's not efficient for me. But, you know, like
maybe
my husband
said. Maybe Trader Joe's should all do all their private
lists. Maybe they should. Exactly. Maybe they should.
Right? Maybe that's the answer.
Who knows? But it's really hard to compare, I think, is the bottom line for me. Because I think RealReal is such an exceptionally run, efficiently run company that, to me, there's not necessarily a comparison
it's
there.
Apples and oranges.
Yeah. I think this new, you know, their funding is going into the RealReal, starting to produce more bricks and mortar locations. It's really improving what they're already doing so well that, you know, I don't know that you can compare the two.
Yeah, Carter, what do you think? I mean, you're the resident millennial.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I am not an active user of either, right? And I can understand just, you know, with the RealReal, what Ann said, and I agree with that. I think the thing with Brandless is, you know, to her point, over the last year, has been incredibly, and I'm afraid to use words.
It's an amazing story.
It's been trendy, too, right? Yeah, I mean, it's gotten a ton of press. It's gotten, and I think, you know, the investment has matched that. Now, just because something's trendy doesn't mean it's bad or good, right? Nope. But looking at what is the long game of that, a little skeptical to say, you know, right now I might really enjoy the $3 product. I mm-hmm. might really enjoy the convenience and the fact because it's cool, it's unique, it's different. It fulfills the things I need right now. But, you know, when you start looking at, you know, the private label game a little bit and all of a sudden you start to say, well, you know, now all of a sudden I have, you know, Brandless where I'm getting these 9 products and I have Amazon where I'm getting these 3 and, like, you know, how long can the trend kind of hang on? Mm-hmm. And are they providing enough value in the experience now to these new consumers to be sticky enough to maintain this momentum that they have?
That's the last point I just can't get over. Like, that's the part, that's the hurdle I can't cross or I can't jump is what you just said. It's like when you have all this selection,
yeah.
how do you still pick all these different things,
sure.
especially with voice coming and all those mm-hmm. different things too. So, all right, because I promised this, the last thing I have to ask you about. There was an amazing discovery this week. It wasn't in the world of retail. It was actually in the world of biological science. They discovered a new geometric shape, and it's called the scutoid. And I apologize if I'm saying that incorrectly. The scutoid, I don't know what it is. What's your take on this thing? It's 5 sides on the top and 6 sides on the bottom.
It's very complex.
It's mind-blowing.
They found it in a cell. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's cellular biology. Like,
where did you
it's
find
amazing.
What are you reading where this comes up? Like, this is
USA Today, man. Like, this is good stuff.
Oh my gosh.
It's the newspaper you get in the morning, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, on my phone. I got the app, dude, for sure. Yeah, nice. It's actually a great app.
It must be a slow news week.
Yeah, it actually is. But did you guys check this out? Like, did you see this? Did you see the story?
I did.
I
was trying to understand how it's formed. It looks like two shapes. They kind of are outlining two shapes that kind of come together so that you can understand exactly where all 5 and all 6 points are on the scutoid.
Yeah. It's like a 5-sided cylinder that becomes 6-sided because of some weird triangular indentation. And who knows why the hell that's happening from a cellular perspective.
I will put it on my list today to look up.
But Carter, you've got to check it out.
I will check it out. Okay. I promise.
I mean, I figured this was on the millennial version.
Sorry. The algorithm did not serve that story to me, unfortunately.
I don't know what that has to do with retail at all.
Surface area. Everything in life comes back.
It could be a fixture. There could be a scutoid fixture someday. Is that what you're saying?
Scutoid fixture. Absolutely.
The secret weapon.
It's about surface area. All right, on that really ridiculous topic, that closes us up for the week. I do want to give one really big shout out and one really big thank you. We just crossed the 1-year anniversary at OmniTalk, and there's 3 people I want to say a big thanks to. 1, Neil Thomas, your new tattoo looks fantastic. 2, Kevin Iverson, thank you so much for all of your feedback along the way. and Laura Heller, thank you so much for taking a chance on us and me especially in writing for Retail Dive. I don't think we'd be here without you. And so as always, be careful out there.